This is Coffee with Kelly, a dynamic podcast that's dedicated to driving positive change in school safety. I'm your host, Ethan Woodman, product marketing specialist for Crisis Go. And I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Kelly Moore, senior school safety specialist for Crisis Go. Our mission is to empower you with essential knowledge, tools, and inspiration required to foster a safer and more secure school environment. We hope this podcast will be the catalyst for transformation in your schools. Join us as we continue to dive into the world of school safety. Well, good morning, Kelly, once again. You know, maybe one day I'll have a different intro, but for now, I'm going to just stick with that. How many cups of coffee have you had already?
I'm on, well, so I drink out of a big Yeti.
Nice.
I'm on my third one of those.
What? How many ounces is the Yeti?
A bunch.
A bunch. You know where the bottle says ounces? Kelly's mug just says a bunch ounces.
A bunch. Yeah. Right.
That must be like a limited edition one or something.
I'm thinking 32-ish.
32?
I think it. Well, let's look it
up. And you've had multiple of those?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, my word.
So my wife and I, we go through about 3 quarts of coffee every morning.
Wow. How much of that is just you?
Most.
Well, I think you definitely got me beat. I don't think I drink that much coffee. Wow. Hey, whatever works, I guess.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is a 42-ouncer.
I'm starting to get a little worried about you, Kelly. Hey, this podcast needs to go to at least season 10. So that's your...
I'll be awake all the way there.
All right. Let's get into it. What do you want to talk about today, Kelly?
Let's talk about unknown threats and how we can start identifying concerning behaviors within society, potentially, to start addressing unknown threats that may come to our school.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of a tough subject. You know, if they're unknown, where do we start?
We start with looking at what's going around us, just being situationally aware with what's going on around us. And, you know, over the past, I'm going to say a few years, actually, we've seen an escalation in civil unrest. And when we look at the potential, I remember when I was putting together the emergency operations plans for the school district that I was the coordinator for, I added civil unrest. And the reason I did that was because I had a fair amount of experience with civil unrest. And the school said, why do you have this here? And I said, because civil unrest is a thing. Well, we've never had that happen in our school. And when I'm talking about civil unrest, there's different levels of civil unrest, all the way from maybe a sit-in, a peaceful, silent protest, you know, we're going to lock our hands together or something like that, all the way to a full-on riot where they're destroying property and they're injuring people and they're threatening people who oppose them, the protesters. They're threatening them with violence, right? So you have the two extremes there, maybe a walkout, maybe a full-on riot, right? And, you know, the reason we bring this up today is because recently, in the past week or so, we had a school in New York City that had a riot where they were threatening a teacher. And the question comes to my mind is, when we start talking about prevention, we start talking about threat identification, we start to think about being proactive for our schools, the safety of our schools and those that are in it. What are we seeing in the public's eye, the public scene, what's going on in society that may then become a threat to our safety and the safety of our students and staff?
It goes back to that question that you've proposed, right? Like in the way beginning of this, of you have to look at everything and say, how does this affect the safety of my staff and students? And so that goes beyond even what's occurring in your walls. That has to also be a question of all the stuff going around you. So this is a perfect example of that.
Right, right. So was this predictable? I would argue, yes, that it was predictable. We look at over the, you know, the past several years where aggressive, violent protests have escalated, peaceful protests have also escalated, but we've seen more and more as we get closer to today, to this date from a few years ago to now, we see more and more people are trying to solve their problems with protests and under the guise, if you will, of this, I want to inform everyone that there's this problem. And what we have to look at is when we start looking at protests and we start seeing this discord and the potential for violence and the peace to be shattered and is no longer peaceful, we have to look at every protest has two sides to that. So the potential for conflict also elevates. And I think we have to look at where we are at as a society, and not just the United States or in America, but globally, because this particular protest was related to what's going on between Israel and the Palestinians. And I'm not going to get into any of those politics, but if you look at the emotions and you look at the ideas that are being bantered back and forth, that one group is right and one group is wrong, that is fuel for added tensions and added violence and the potential for violence and the idea that you have this potential threats coming to people who are on the other side of your argument. So was it predictable? We could argue that if it's happening in society, it could happen in our schools.
Yeah, I mean, you see a lot of similar things that are happening outside of the school happening inside the school. Like this isn't the first time.
Right. Schools are a reflection of our society. And they're this microcosm. And in some cases, they magnify the problem quite a bit because we've talked about this before. Many of our students, not all of them, but many of our students have issues with problem solving and conflict resolution. And they're very emotional just because they're growing teenagers. They're very emotional. They have hormones that are raging. In fact, we call them raging teenagers, right? Raging hormones and stuff that cause them to overreact to things or take a side without all of the information and so forth. So is it predictable? Sure. We just don't know where or when, but we could see that this was not a surprise to me that this was happening, but I couldn't tell you that it was going to happen in New York City, but it did.
So obviously the teacher went to a rally because it's something that she believed in. Is this like, do we tell our teachers like, hey, don't get involved with this stuff because it could, you know, put you in danger in a school? Or do we say, hey, do what you want, but let us know so that we can account for it? Like what's the strategy there, I guess is my question. Okay.
You're talking on First Amendment rights, right? Sure. Free speech, the right to worship as you believe, so forth. And the fact is you probably can't tell them you can't do this. You can likely say, I can't tell you to not participate in your political views and your religious beliefs and so forth. I can't tell you not to do that. But I can tell you, please consider what you're doing and how it impacts the school. I can tell you that.
Yep.
Right. But the fact is that when we focus on inclusion of everybody and we focus on equity and diversity and so forth, at some point, you're going to come in conflict. You're going to create a conflict.
Because not everyone agrees with everyone.
That's right. Right. And if you're looking at diversity, equity, and inclusion, and I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm saying if you do, understand that at some point, somebody that you're including is going to be in conflict with somebody else you're including.
Yep.
Right. So if that's what your goal is, then we need to have those conversations and we need to know what those impacts are going to be and how they impact our schools. And we've talked a little bit about this and what are we doing? What are our schools doing that are detrimental to our students? Some of it is, look at, if you have a beef, you should feel like you can address that beef and, you know, vocalize your concerns about what's happening. That's good. But let's talk about it. Let's not say, oh, it's okay to riot. It's okay to threaten. It's okay to do this. And then when it happens to our school, be surprised that it's happening. Yeah. Because there in society, there's also this idea that because of our political views, I'll say it that way, that we've experienced a trend where people aren't held accountable for their actions. And that some people are entitled to misbehave because they're victims of something else.
Yep.
And if we're not going to hold people accountable in society and then try to hold our students accountable when they do something that we don't approve, you're going to have a very hard time doing it. I mean, from my perspective in this situation, and I don't know the final outcome, but they talked about suspending and expelling three of the primary instigators in that riot. So they identified who started it, who started the conversation, who started. I don't know to what extent they started to advocate or incite a riot or start threatening the teacher. I don't know those details. But from my perspective and my background, some of those kids should be going to jail, not just being expelled from school. And maybe that's happening. But if we're not holding them accountable for these threats that they're making to a specific teacher because of her beliefs, then we have a bigger issue here. And we're going to have to address that. Now, our listeners might be saying, well, that would never happen here, right? Or what have you. And we don't have that kind of situation here. And my response to that is yet. Because this type of activity, with or without consequences, tends to breed more of these types of activities. And we have to look at, okay, this is a thing now. Riots in our school is a potential. What if, and I'm going to pose this question to you.
I'm ready for it.
You are? Okay, good. I'm a 14, 15, 16-year-old kid, and I have an issue that I'm going to start rallying support for that I want to protest against my school. My intent is to bring this issue to the surface, and I'm fed up with it, and I think I can get rally some support, and we're going to go protest. And then people start, as kids do, and we call this mob mentality. There's a name for this. They start to escalate very quickly. What if the intent was to protest, to go there, and the school administration sees this wave of students, or at a certain time during the day, this wave of students exits all of the classrooms unauthorized, and they start their protest, and it turns violent. Kids get hurt, teachers get hurt, and it turns violent. What if one of those students was also that guy who is thinking about perpetrating a shooting. Mm. And you could say this is extreme. You could say that there is no way that this would happen until I tell you this story from Kelly's world. If you've listened to any of these podcasts at all, I've talked about my experience as the incident commander in an incident, an active shooter in California, where six people were killed. And I've told you that when we talked about the pathway to violence, how that person escalated to the point where they were just about to initiate their plan, and they pulled themselves back for a couple of reasons. One of them was that they were going to shoot up this unsanctioned party where we have 50 or 60,000 people, right? That was going to be one of his plans. And then he decided that there was going to be too many cops there. So he decided not to do it. All right. That's generally the place where I stop the story, because I'm focused on the actions of this shooter and his progression through this pathway of violence. What I haven't told you, I don't believe I have, is that very incident where he was originally going to shoot up this large unsanctioned party that involved the entire community. We had an incident where there was a full-on riot where the crowd of, not everyone obviously, but several thousand people are within this very narrow street, just wide enough to get two cars through and park on one side or the other. So you're talking maybe 60 feet, right? With apartment complexes on either side, creating essentially a boxed canyon where people had very little exit opportunities, because a lot of these properties were fenced. A lot of them had parking issues. So they limited the access to their properties, because it's very densely populated. So all of the focus was on quelling this riot. I was the infield commander for that riot. We had mutual aid from many, many departments. This went on for hours. And so now I want everyone to picture this. Typical riot control from law enforcement, they have a skirmish line to prevent people from advancing on them. We've seen this on, if you don't know, go look at any video where there's a riot. You have a defined skirmish line where you're either advancing or just preventing people from advancing on you. And we're getting attacked with, people are throwing full, they call them handles. They're like gallon and a half bottles of alcohol at us. They're being launched from balconies and so forth, right? So we're using tear gas and other munitions to get people far enough away that they can't actually reach us. But we still have the balconies to worry about. But we have this skirmish line. We have this area that we've secured between us and the crowd, maybe 75 feet, 100 feet, not very far, but significant enough that they're having difficulty reaching us with what they're throwing at us. And then you have several thousand people bunched up making this crowd. Okay. So you have that visual. What if our shooter said, you know what? They're busy. I'm going to go to the back of that crowd and I'm going to start shooting. What do you think would have happened?
They're going to run in the opposite direction or everywhere, and it's just going to be chaos.
He's going to be very successful, right? They're going to run away from him towards law enforcement, who is what? On edge. They are in survival mode, protection mode. And there's shots being fired from the crowd. I'm not going to say what that potential is, but you could see that here very easily could have been a guy who changed his plan and said, you know what? This is perfect for me. I can go in and they're going to be focused on this riot and nobody's going to listen to the alerts that are being given or whatever, because I'm there in an act of defiance.
Yeah.
So when we start looking about the potential of these things and combining events, which is not a far stretch, then we have to look at how do we respond to that? How do we prepare for that? How do we notify people of that? How do we clear that hallway?
Mm.
Right? Same situation. You have this sort of boxed canyon. Of course, you're likely not going to have elevated positions, but you're going to have this box canyon where there is no escape, or the escape is very limited. So how do we limit that? How do you notify people who don't want to be there anymore? You know what I mean? How do you do that?
What's the best way to do that? I know you had a question earlier about notifications.
This is where I come in. So this comes from my a question that I've seen, you know, obviously in my research. I try to look at what everyone's talking about in terms of, you know, emergency alerting platforms and what they like and what they don't like. And a common question that I see is, you know, a lot of these alerting systems, when they send an alert, it's loud. It's, you know, it's not necessarily totally silent. And you know, there's some question of, hey, if there's an active shooter, why am I getting this alert that's super loud? Isn't that going to attract the shooter to me? So that was kind of that's the common question that I see.
Yeah. So I think we've talked about this before, maybe not sufficiently, and probably why you're asking the question, or at least bringing it up, is we've evolved from codes and bells and different tones because people were getting confused. And we want people to understand, and it goes back to the two things that people who are faced with a crisis want to know, which are what?
What's happening and what do you want me to do? Yeah.
Perfect.
Let's go.
You're getting it. You got it, dude. Right? So they just want to know those two things. What's happening and what do you want me to do? And I always say, generally speaking, those are actually reversed. They want to know what's happening first, especially in a school environment, because they're always asking, why? Why do we need to do that? Why is this important? The fact of the matter is what they need to do, what you want them to do, is the first order of business. What's happening doesn't really matter, because I know what's happening and I'm telling you that you need to get into this emergency protective action. And this is not for debate. This is not a discussion. This is for your safety. Get into this emergency protective action. Lockdown, secure, evacuation, shelter, or hold is what we use. That's the most important thing. So how do we notify them of that first? And then once we notify them, then we can say, all right, we got everyone moving into the protective actions. Now we can call 911. Now, if you can make that happen at the same time, fantastic. And of course, we can. That's a thing these days. But we really have to look at how do we notify them so that they understand what they need to do. And we don't want them to have to interpret that. Was that two bells? One bell? Was that a code gray?
Yeah, or like code gray and code green could easily get mixed up.
Green or red, yeah, or whatever. These codes that people were using, they were making up all kinds of these codes that nobody really understood, especially in an emergency, and they didn't hear it correctly. So they were doing things and it was ambiguous and it was confusing. So everyone, including FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security, says,
use common language and repeat it. So now we have to look at how do we notify as many people as possible. Do we want to notify 100% of the people impacted? Absolutely. But we also know that that's not realistic. So we have to notify as many people as quickly as possible to get them moving into this emergency protective action. So the vast majority of us are hearing and sight capable. So hearing sounds, hearing what we want to do, like we can do audible voice alerts where we can say lockdown, locks, lights, out of sight, locks, lights, out of sight, right? We can do that. And so that's going to handle most of the people. Now we have to account for those others that have hearing impairment and sight impairment. So if it's just sight, they can hear it as well. If it's hearing impairment, then we have to look at flashing lights, vibrating phones, those types of things that should be made available to them if they're not. But we have to, we can't rely on, because part of your initial question to me earlier was, why don't we just send a vibrate because it's so loud otherwise, and we don't want to alert the shooter and let them know where we're at. Well, first of all, the shooter knows he's there. He or she is there. So that it's no surprise when they know that you know that they're there because they know they're there. The second is, would that draw attention to me? Likely not. Is it possible? I suppose it is. But when you have that initial alert and it goes out for 30 seconds, you're going to have, in most schools, you're going to have 50, 60 or more, 100 in some cases, of these alerts going off. It's going to go off for 30 seconds unless you disable it before that. Or you acknowledge it, I should say. It's not a disable.
Yeah.
You acknowledge that you got it. You push it off and it's silent. And then any alert after that is silent. So we accomplish kind of both things. Sure, there's some lag time there, but it's where we notify as many people as possible in the way that you can identify that this is not a regular bell. There's no confusion as what you want me to do. Locks, lights, out of sight is, you know, lockdown, locks, lights, out of sight. It's the action I want you to take. And these are how you achieve that action. And so that's pretty, pretty simple to do. And then after, even if you don't do anything, after 30 seconds, the alert stops and all of the alerts after that are silent. So you kind of limit the exposure there. But the most important thing is get them into that action. And even if the perpetrator, the bad actor, whatever we want to call the guy or gal, even if they understand or know where you're at, if you sufficiently secured your position and taken the right steps, that's why it's important to practice and practice and practice. If you have done it correctly, they're not going to be able to access your location.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I can imagine that, like, if you were the assailant in this situation, it's like you're walking in and then all of a sudden, like, there's lights going off, there's these wicked loud, you know, alarms going off. Like, that'd be pretty, I'd be almost like very disorienting.
Right. Yeah, and it can be, especially when you have all these alarms going off and bells, whatever is going off, right? And you have this very loud environment, you have shooting going on, you have all of these things, it's very difficult to discern mm-hmm. location, sounds bounce off walls, you know, acoustically speaking, schools yeah. are horrible in concrete, the hallways. Yeah. So concrete, brick, those types of things are there. And that's why it's so loud during passing period. And you can imagine with shots being fired and people screaming and alarms going off and alerts going off and so forth, it would be very, could be very chaotic, especially with some of the strobe lights and stuff that we can integrate with. But it also goes to the earlier that you can get warning that something bad is about to happen, the better off you are. And that's when you start talking about integration of early warning with some of our partners like Zero Eyes, things like that, where you can start setting up these perimeters that extend beyond your front doors or your doors that extend beyond that. And they can identify threats even 30, 40 seconds before you have somebody actually committing acts of violence in your hallways. And most of us would take those 30, 40 seconds and really utilize or take advantage of those to get people moving into that protective action. We would love to have 30, 40 seconds before any shot was fired.
I'm pretty confident that most teachers could easily do all those measures to lock the door and turn the lights down, like totally off. And they could easily do that within 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Or at least start getting everyone there, because as soon as the perpetrator is through the door, they're not presented with 1,000 people unless those people had not been notified. If you have 30 seconds and somebody is standing at the door and they understand what to do, they can run to the far end of the school without any issue. So we know that they can get into, at least get moving towards that place of security, that location where they're going to be safe.
I think that answers that question pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things. I totally get it. But that's why it's also important that we have integrations with partners, and we understand that a lot of what we can do relies on people who are doing other things and trying to manage those all into one platform. And, you know, I talked about Zero Eyes, or Rise Vision is another company that we partner with visitor management. And where we have visitor management, we have digital displays. How do we post our alerts onto these digital displays? And how do we detect a gun before it's gone off? How do we detect a gun after it's gone off, but before it's seen? So it's getting those early warnings going. But when you take it back to the original scenario that we're working with here, is this riot, and how do we alert that? And how do we get a mass of people, of rioters, who are focused on destruction, potentially violence, how do we get that mass of people to start complying? That's the question, right? I can send that alarm off and that alert off and get everyone who's sort of on the fringe to get into a lockdown or what have you. But what about the actual mass of people who are hell-bent on destruction and or violence? How do you do that? That's a question that you're going to have to answer on your own. And you can send the alert and you can send all of that stuff. But like I said, compliance is going to be an issue here. I know it is, because they're already being defiant. They walked out of class.
They've already made that decision.
I'm not going back. And if they're looking at that alert as being a ruse to get you back into class, it may or may not work. I would try it. I would certainly try it. It may get some people out, and the more people you get out of the mix and into a secured position, the more they're protected. And there's going to be students that are rightfully and legitimately fearful of what's happening. They don't know what's happening. They don't understand it. They're not part of it. So we have to protect those people. How do we do that? What's our relationship with law enforcement? Because it might be a good idea to have a good relationship if and when this happens to you, because they're going to understand. And have that conversation now. Have that conversation with them as we move forward. How can the parents help you? I mean, we've talked a lot recently about parents and how do we leverage the parents of our students to be a part of our early warning system. hey, I hear this group is starting to chat on social media about having a protest or a riot at your campus tomorrow. As I've articulated, you may actually be saving a life if you have that relationship with your parents and they're confident and willing and they feel safe to make that report early on. And then you can account for that as opposed to the teacher. And I'm not 100% clear on this. I read it, but I wasn't quite sure. Of course, it was an article and didn't have all of the details in it. But my belief is they secured her in her room because she came in and reported that there was online threats to this. And they secured her in her room. And then they had to remove her because rioters went to her room.
That is what the article
said. So it's those types of things. And I applaud her for not being too shaken up about it and willing to have this sort of, let's have meaningful conversation about this. And this was the wrong response to whatever it was that I did as a teacher. Let's have a conversation about it and let's talk about it and see if we can't come into some common ground area. But when we're talking about the protection of students and so forth, most of our parents are pretty aware of what our kids are doing. Maybe not as much as I think, but can we use them as an early warning system to help us protect not only their kids who might be involved, but other kids? Because if you go back to a violent situation and mob mentality, the potential for violence escalates significantly from the protesters. But in a response to a violent protest, the potential for violence in response to that violence protest also goes up.
Yep.
And that's something that none of us want to be involved in. And I think if we have the ability and we start thinking about the potential for civil unrest, not only coming to our schools, but starting at our schools and how we're going to deal with that, just got more priority from my perspective. It's got a higher priority because it takes one time and we've had it one time. And now the potential for it to happen at other places is now, oh, we can do that. So they got expelled. Who cares? Right. And well, this was the reason this wasn't successful because we talked about after action and we talked about why we as safety coordinators, as safety professionals, why we should do after action reviews. We also know that potential shooters and people who are going to do harm to people and use the vehicle of this protest as their vehicle for violence, we know that they study previous acts. And when you have an act to study, it makes it easier than to start your own riot or your own protest. If you don't never seen it done before, don't know how it would work out in a school, now you know. And now you can know what they did right, what they did wrong, and you can make adjustments to that. And people who are going or who have a proclivity to act out like this can and will do the research and they will make improvements.
You know, it's just, I'm continuing to think about this and it's, you know, next year, like what we're in the, we're getting a new president, right? Next year. So this is a prime example. Like you've got two different sides. I don't care which side you're on. That's something you need to think about if you're as a school, like you're going to have those two sides. They're going to be having those arguments, but we need to somehow turn them into, you know, respectful and meaningful conversations. And just realize like, hey, like things like this can happen. And with tensions high and all that, like it makes it more and more likely.
Right. This goes back to the diversity, inclusion, equity, and the unintended consequences of that when they're trying to bring society closer together by diversifying, including, and creating equity, they've actually created a situation that, and I'm not the only one saying this, this is on both sides of the aisle, as so to speak, is we have probably never been more divided as a nation than we are right now. And how does that impact our school safety? And who's responsible for that? These are just questions. I'm not going to answer them. But how do we account for the safety of our students in this environment? It's important for us as those who are responsible for the safety of our students and our staff to take this into consideration and look at how this could have been prevented. Left of Bang. Bang was the riot. How could this have been prevented? And how could it have been prevented while still upholding the rights of the Constitution? We need to have those conversations.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. And if you have any questions about what we discussed, leave a comment on our website at crisisgo.com. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time on Coffee with Kelly, a discussion on school safety.